if the SU2 cross SU2 in of the quark bottle is broken spontaneously, there should be three Goldstone bosons, which we can identify as a limit of the pions of the standard model, and started talking about their properties and other models with the same symmetry structure. So the model that we left off at was a sigma model. It's basically interactions of a field, model of interactions of a field sigma. And now I'm going to use a somewhat abbreviated notation. Instead of writing out the explicit exponentials of the tau matrices, I'll just write this as something that transforms as V left sigma V right dagger. So this is an SU2 left matrix, this is an SU2 right matrix, and SU2 axial transformations have V left equals V right dagger. SU2 vector has V left equals V right. If I wanted to write this out explicitly in terms of tau matrices, this would be e to the minus I alpha left a tau a e to the 2i tau a, sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself, times sigma times e to the I alpha right a tau a. Okay? So that's the transformation of the field, sigma. We can break down a field like that into, I mean, this is a matrix-valued field, so it's a compact way of storing information, but we want to break it down. We can write down a linear parametrization where sigma is equal to a lowercase sigma times the identity matrix plus I tau a pi a. Okay, these are all dimension one fields, and sigma is a dimension one field. Can also write down the square root like you did in tutorial, or the exponential parametrization where sigma is equal to v plus s. So v is some fixed vev. We're going to want to choose parameters consistently so that v is actually a minimum of the, so that s equals 0 is actually a minimum of the potential, times e to the 2i tau a pi a over v. Okay. Now this exponential parametrization has a nice feature, which is that if I look at an axial transformation, that's the broken SU2, and how it acts on sigma, how it acts on the constituent pi fields, well, it's going to pass right through the S field, right? Because I just need to multiply these matrices. So it's V plus S, e to the minus I alpha axial, I'll call it, a tau a, e to the 2i pi a tau a over v, times e to the minus I, again, alpha a tau a, at linear order in alpha. So to all orders in alpha, it's not mixing s with the pions. It's just mixing the pions among themselves. To leading order in alpha, I can just add these. The order alpha squared the order alpha piece is just e to the 2i pi a minus alpha a tau a. I guess I should give this alpha a v tau a over v. So that's just at leading order. It's a shift of alpha, of the pions. That means that the Lagrangian for those pions has to be, even though the vacuum doesn't respect the SU2 asymmetry, the Lagrangian itself should respect the SU2a. It means that the Lagrangian itself has to respect these shifts. So the Lagrangian should be invariant. Under small shifts of the pis. Which in turn implies that it's going to have to be built, that it should have invariance, that the only interactions of a pion that have invariance under the symmetry are going to be functions of del mu pi. Okay, so we say that the pions have a shift symmetry, which is related to this old SU2a. And the lingo for this kind of symmetry, where symmetry is spontaneously broken, but you clearly still care about its action on the field, and in fact, the action on all the fields has to respect the symmetry, is that the symmetry is non-linearly realized. Now, you can also see just by eye that any interactions you get in this sigma model that involve the pions will only involve derivatives of the pions. How do you see that? Well, the kinds of invariants that I can build are chains, basically chains of sigma-sigma daggers. So I can take a trace of sigma-sigma dagger, or I can go sigma-sigma dagger, sigma-sigma dagger, and then take a trace of that, etc. But anytime you have a sigma-sigma dagger, all the pions are just going to cancel out, right? I'll only get a function of S because this here is a unitary matrix. So it doesn't matter how complicated an interaction I write down that's just a product of sigmas and sigma daggers, I'll never get any pions out of that. Now, if I have interactions that involve del mu sigma, that's the only way I can get something out because del mu sigma is going to include pieces that look like V plus S again, times del mu pi A tau A times that same exponential again. Okay, so in fact, del mu sigma is really equal to a piece that goes like del mu S plus an I del mu pi, sorry, 2i del mu pi tau a over v times sigma itself. So this is generic for Goldstone bosons. When you have a theory involving interactions of or a theory involving just Goldstone bosons, there will always be such a shift symmetry. And the interactions will always be derivatively coupled. If you write things, for example, in the linear parametrization, where the Goldstone bosons mix with non-Goldstone bosons, that won't necessarily be true. But there's always a way of parametrizing so that they have a shift symmetry. Now, the sigma model still involves this field S. It's not mixing with the pions, but it's still there. S is not a Goldstone boson, so we can integrate S out. And when we do, we'll get a theory of now just a unitary matrix valued field. So you did an example in class with Philip, right, on the last Tuesday with integrating out a heavy scalar field, right? He told me he did that. Is it ringing a bell for everyone? So all it means is that I have, conceptually, is that I have an effective Lagrangian at scales. So here's the mass of some particle S, say. Here's the effect of Lagrangian. It depends on a bunch of light fields phi and the field S. Below that scale, I have every right to talk about an effect of Lagrangian that is only a function of the phi I. Okay? And I think Philip talked about a procedure for how to get this effect of Lagrangian from the higher energy one, how to match coefficients of this Lagrangian to coefficients of that Lagrangian. I won't go back over that, but that's all I mean is I want to now write a theory for the degrees of freedom that aren't f. So just for the pion interactions. Since I don't really care, just 1 second, since I don't really care about the nonlinear sigma model or the sigma model as a particular theory, we don't think that's a theory of nature, I'm actually not going to bother doing this matching step. I'm just going to write down the most general Lagrangian for the pi i's. So in this literal case, these phi i's are the pi i's, pi a. This is an L effect of pi a. I just want to write down the most general Lagrangian for the pi a's consistent with symmetry. That'll be a starting point for talking about the physical pions. You had a question too. Well, so that it works out differently in the derivative, in the exponential or the linear or the quadratic parametrization. Depending on how you break things up at high energies, you're going to get a different form, a different way of getting the same interactions at the low energies. So in the exponential parametrization, it's really easy. I just told you that even with the S field, the only interactions of the pions are derivative couplings, right? So if I have, I mean, well, let me just go one step further. If I define a matrix U, which is, this is going to be a dimensionless matrix, but it's going to carry my fields. Each of the 2i pi a tau a over, let me for a minute call it V again, the same V that I had up there. Then clearly pi, sorry, clearly sigma is just V plus S times U, right? In my exponential parametrization. And so I can write down each of those trace terms as being a V plus S times say trace of U dagger U. And in many cases, and this will always, so let's say I was talking about the, yeah, let me talk about this term, the trace of, sorry, that vanishes for the pions. If I talk about something like the trace of sigma, del mu sigma dagger, del mu sigma squared, that is going to go, that would normally, we'd say this has dimension, sorry, that's still, why don't I just, I'll just stick to the kinetic term. So this has dimension one, that would, sorry, dimension four as it's supposed to. That goes in this new parametrization to a V plus S squared times a trace of the U's. And plus the S kinetic term. Plus from the terms that have like sigma, sigma, dagger. So I'll just write it down. I have some term that goes like a half del mu S plus M squared S squared. When I minimize the equations of motion, this is quadratic in S. I'm just going to basically set S to zero. And that'll be the end result. And then I'll be left with a V squared trace W U dagger W U. Okay, so in this case, and then in addition to that, I'll have terms that look like Feynman diagrams where I had, say, two pions connected to two S's. Okay, so I'll draw my S's as solid lines, or to one S. Those would give me higher derivative pion interactions, something with a structure of, say, trace sigma, del mu sigma dagger, del mu sigma dagger, sigma squared, which I can over V to the fourth, which I can interpret in terms of my U fields as just a trace of del mu U dagger del mu U squared. Okay. And so I'll also, it's not that I'll just get this trace operator, I'll also get all these other ones from trees and loops of S's. But in this parametrization, the exponent, the derivative coupling is just coming from the fact that the pions were derivatively coupled to begin with. In the other parametrizations, it's a lot less obvious that they'll end up being derivatively coupled, but they end up that way in the end. I think through a cancellation of two diagrams in the linear case. Okay. So what have we got? We've got this theory of U. And again, let me not worry about where the term, where each term came from in the theory, in the sigma model with an S. Let me just write down the most general Lagrangian for this field U consistent with the symmetries. So, and also let me take, when I do that, because I want to interpret this more generally, I'm going to change this V to just e to the 2i pi a tau a over f. F is some characteristic scale of the theory, but once I'm talking just about the pion fields, this theory has no trace of that, whether it's the VEV of a simple scalar field or that F is a scale associated with something much more complicated, like a QCD confining transition. So, what's the most general Lagrangian I can write down consistent with the symmetries of this U? Well, I'm not going to write down UU daggers because those are trivial, but I can write down a some F squared over 4, that's just to set the canonical normalization, times a trace of del mu U, del mu U dagger. I can add to that terms, again, the kind of F squared sigma dagger sigma that I used to have before, or mu squared sigma dagger sigma. That trace is just one, so I won't keep track of that term. It's just a constant correction to the potential. I have some coefficient, C1, times the trace of del mu U dagger, del mu U squared. And note that the first term in this, when I expand it out, because each U, the leading term in each U that I can get a non-zero answer from, has a, in particular, it has a derivative. Each U carries with it a pi over f. Okay? So when I take four, two U's and two U daggers, I'm going to get something that looks very schematically like del pi to the fourth over f to the fourth. So in the energy expansion, this goes like e to the fourth over f to the fourth. All the terms that I'm about to write down also go like e to the fourth over f to the fourth. Whereas this one just goes like, by the same logic, del pi squared over f squared. So this is just going to be an e squared, order e squared term. Okay, so I can keep going. I'll just write down the other terms that one can include in this order e to the fourth Lagrangian. Sorry. So here I'm using two different derivatives and just contracting them with another trace. I can add a C3 trace of del mu u dagger, del nu u dagger, and a C4 trace del mu u dagger, del nu u dagger. Okay, and then the next round of terms out there would be terms that go like derivative to the sixth over f to the eighth times. So del pi to the sixth over f to the eighth. So those would be even higher order in the energy expansion. I'm never going to talk about those. So what we'd do if we wanted to study just if we lived in this literal world, I haven't put in pi on masses yet, so this is not our world. But if we lived in a world with exactly massless pions, this would be their Lagrangian. This is the most general Lagrangian I can write down for massless interacting pions that respects the, and actually I've written, this is for a general SUN cross SUN breaking to SUN kind of theory. If I just extended my U to not necessarily have the SU2 tau matrices, but you know, if I had an SU5, I could take the 24 generators of SU5 and write a theory of 24 pions. It would have exactly the same form with just these four coefficients. What I do is I look at the scattering of all these massless pions, measure these four coefficients, and if I could find good agreement with all the data with these four coefficients, then I just have a measurement. If, and also I'd need to measure f. If I couldn't find a good fit to the data with these coefficients, that would mean that the symmetry breaking pattern actually didn't describe the world, because, well, if I couldn't find agreement and it was already having problems at order e to the fourth over f to the fourth, order e to the fourth, then I know that there are problems with, that this symmetry structure doesn't describe that world. Okay, so this is, in principle, with enough data about the pions, testable. And if you had even more data about the pions, really high precision, then you could go on to measure these e to the sixth terms as well. But we don't have anything like that, so I'll go back to this. And I should also mention, I said this was for general SUN. If I go to, say, SU2, then it turns out that I can write these two traces in terms of the other two traces. In fact, this one is just proportional to this the trace proportion appearing in C1. So for SU2, I just need C1 and C2, because C3 and C4 are secretly combinations of the same operators. For SU3, which we'll look at in a minute when we think about light up, down, and strange quarks, we just need C1, C2, and C3, but we can decompose C4 into other operators. So I believe that's also just equivalent to some linear combination of C1 and C2. But I don't. I mean, these are, well, look, these are both just pulling down derivatives of pions, right? I mean, we know what del mu u is. It's del mu pi times tau. Yeah, sorry, it's del mu pi a tau a, you know, times 2 over f. Times u. This guy's also just pulling down some derivatives of pion times u dagger. So then I just commute the u matrix through the pi matrix, and in some sense it doesn't really, you can see it's not going to matter too much where each pi derivative came from. So I think this is a fairly straightforward matrix algebra exercise that I won't try to do here on the board. It's not quite that straightforward. But I believe this is complete. Now, all right, if we were to do the calculations at order e to the fourth, like I was talking about, to measure these parameters, we'd have to do a loop order calculation. And a lot of times, people say this is a non, I mean, this is a non-renormalizable theory, right? These interactions, when I write them in terms of dimensionful fields, they have an f to the fourth in the denominator. So this is a very non-renormalizable interaction. A lot of times, people get very scared of renormalization, of doing loop calculations in non-renormalizable theories. Quantum gravity is a hard problem, but it's not a hard problem because at low energies you can't do calculations in non-renormalizable theories. In fact, you can, because and so I want to show you how that's very roughly, very qualitatively, how that's a manageable problem as long as you only care about a fixed order in energy expansion. So let's say I'm at low energies, I'm at some E much less than F, and I want precision up to terms that are of order E over F to the fourth. Okay? So if I looked at a loop calculation that had a loop term that had an e to the fourth interaction and an e squared interaction, I'd get an e to the sixth interaction. So loops with e to the fourth and e squared don't contribute. But loops of e squared interactions do contribute. I can just do a one loop treatment of my e squared interactions. Yep. Sorry, what I meant is loops of that. So if I take a loop that has where I form the loop from e to the fourth interactions and e squared interactions. But I'm always putting two interactions together. I'm saying loops that have an e to the fourth and an e squared next to each other. Those don't contribute at this order. They're order e to the sixth. Loops of just e squared and e squared. Things like, which in this case, e squared is just the kinetic term. These are just the wave function renormalization. Things like that. Those do contribute. Those, so you have to do those loop calculations and take it into account. And you, of course, have to consider tree level e to the fourth. But this is all you need. So as long as you truncate at a finite precision in E over F, you can also truncate at finite loop order and finite number of terms in the Lagrangian and get your result to that accuracy. All right, so now enough of these massless pions. Okay, let's go back to the real world. Quarks have a mass, and we want to see how we can incorporate that mass into a description of the pions. So we discussed last time that when we write down a quark mass term, something like a Q right conjugate M quark Q left, and I transposed this. That breaks actually both SU2s, SU2 axial and SU2 vector explicitly. Sorry, question? Yeah, I mean, well, sorry, you want to just connect the two, take an e to the fourth and just draw a propagator there. Yeah, those actually don't contribute either. depending on how you handle the regulation. Okay. So I don't want to spend too much time on that, because it's really something where actually to do the real calculations is pretty involved. So I'm going to work mostly at tree level, but yeah, you don't need to consider those either. So how do we use this symmetry to guide us if it's explicitly broken? Well, first of all, this means just on general grounds that the pions aren't Goldstone bosons. They are what we call pseudo Goldstone bosons. Or more commonly, people add recognition to NAMBU, and these are PNGBs. So that just means that the mass of the pion isn't equal to zero. In fact, in general, if we had some mass terms in a sigma model, in a linear sigma model, we could calculate the pion mass squareds. We'll only be able to calculate them up to an overall scale, which, when all the pions are basically the same mass, isn't very impressive. When we add kaons into the picture, that'll start looking non-trivial again. But we still want some systematic way of keeping track of how this mass enters into the interactions. So let's just imagine that M Q was actually VEV of some scalar field, vacuum expectation value. So of some scalar field, that so then if that scalar field transformed in the right way, then this operator would respect the SU2. It's just that the VEV would violate the SU2. Right? So I can think of MQ as being equal to the expectation value of some field, which I'll write as a very script MQ. And as long as MQ transforms under these SU2 transformations as you write MQ, you left dagger, then the Lagrangian would be invariant. Okay, so this general line of reasoning and using this, what I'm about to show you, goes by the name of a spurion technique. I'm basically promoting a constant that breaks a symmetry into thinking about it as though it transformed as a symmetry, using that to guide under the symmetry, and using that to guide what terms I can write down. Question? Does that help? Thank you. So let's say I write, so then if what fields could I write down? How could in my low energy theory, let's say I still want to talk about the script M field, and I want to talk about the U matrix. How could U interact with script MQ? Well, you remember the transformation of U up on that board. If I write down trace of U MQ, that's invariant under the two SU2s. So this is an allowed interaction. U has dimension one, has dimension zero, M has dimension one. So I need to put some coefficient delta in front of this. To make up the dimensionality. Now, I have to, if I'm going to put this into the Lagrangian, I better make it real. So I'll write down my symmetry breaking Lagrangian is equal to that plus its complex conjugate. Now let's say, now that I've used this trick, and of course I could go on, I'm going to follow convention and make this a delta over 2. I could go on and add higher order terms, things that go like trace of um times del mu u, trace, and so on. This now, every time I put in an m, see this delta, I mean, m has its mass scale associated with how it actually interacts with with the quarks. But we don't know a priori the strength of how much m will affect, how much symmetry breaking the expectation of this m, the physical mass, will induce in the sigma model sector, in this U matrix, right? How much it'll induce in the pions. So we need to parametrize that with some coefficient delta. And this delta you should really think of as parametrizing how much the pion sector couples, how much it feels the symmetry breaking coming from the mass. All right, so every time I introduce a mass into this Lagrangian, I'm going to accompany it with a delta. And then I count dimensions. So delta, if you look here, delta has dimensions of mass cubed. M has dimensions of mass. So this is dimension 4, 5, 6. This term will be a delta over F squared. And so on. And you can also write down terms that are higher order in the mass. I won't go on with those. Let's just look at this starting term. Okay? So let's say that I can diagonalize. I can always work in a basis where MQ is diagonal. Let me take this to be M up, M down. And that means I can also write this trace, the sum of these two traces, as just a trace of U plus U dagger times M up, M down. Times my delta over 2 factor. Now, clearly not going to get any interesting interactions from the so each U is going to have its unit term plus 2i pi a tau a over v minus 2 pi a tau a pi b tau b over v over sorry over f squared, and this is over f consistency. All right, and then I'm going to add my u dagger term times M up, M down. Plus, and I mean, I could continue expanding to higher order in the pions. That would give me some quartic interactions proportional to the masses. But you see, the odd terms are going to drop out because I'm adding the conjugate, the U and the U conjugate. So that and this will cancel. Well, the leading term that I'm left with is the quadratic terms from these dot products. So the leading term is just trace of minus 4i pi a tau a pi b tau b over f squared from either one of those. And I get a sorry, these are different A's. That's it, sorry. Not multiplying them, I'm adding them. So I just get these quadratic terms times my m up, m down. Now, remember these taus were sigma matrices over four? So the only combination that'll actually give me a non-zero trace are if the taus are the same. If the taus are the same, then so tau A, tau B, trace, I mean, the only term that I'm going to get is when A and B are the same, and then tau A is just equal to 1/4. So that trace will just give me minus, sorry, did I write an I there? I didn't want an I there. Minus pi A over F squared times the trace of this M up, M down, M up plus M down. Yeah? The ones, I'm dropping the ones, so they're there, but I'm dropping them because they're just a constant term, and I'm interested in calculating the pi on mass. Huh? Yeah, no. So I'm saying, so yes, I could add to this trace, plus m up plus m down times whatever, two. Okay? But this has no fields in it. So it's still, I've now set this. Now that I've used this trick of an M field, this is what you're thinking. Now that I'm thinking of use this trick of the M field to write down the interactions in the Lagrangian, I'm going to go ahead and set M to what it actually is, which is just some numbers, some mass terms. So now this term in the trace just has some numbers, M up and M down in it. And I really don't need to keep, I mean, as far as pion physics, leaving aside the cosmological constant for a minute, this trace of m up m down has no dynamical interest, except for its contribution to the CC, which is added to some completely unknown other contributions to the CC. So we're just left with this. Okay, I'm gonna forget about that because it's just non-dynamical, and I'll keep track. Again, I had this prefactor that I dropped of delta over 2. So you see, now minus delta over 2, I can just read off the mass of the pions, right? Because this looks just like a scalar mass term, the right sign. By comparing that to minus m squared over 2 pi a pi a, I get that m pi squared is equal to delta times m up plus m down over f pi. Yeah. And so you can think of MQ as being an arbit. First of all, this thing about treating MQ as a dynamical field is really a gimmick to let you construct the right symmetry interaction. So you shouldn't take the dynamics of the MQ field too literally or really worry about it. You can think of MQ as being an extremely heavy field. And so the so by adding this dynamical field in, you're kind of going out of your effective theory description. But if you just decided to keep that field in your description, because you always, have the freedom to, then write down these interactions, and then go back into the effective theory. Once you've written down the interactions, go back into the effective theory where you've set it to its bev. But again, it's all, you shouldn't seriously think, well, it's actually possible that this, We know that the MQs actually did come from the VEV of some, we think we know, from some scalar field. The Yukawas might have come from the VEVs of some other scalar field. So this might not be a complete gimmick. It might actually be more true than we realize. But at the level we're using it, it's just a trick, a mnemonic for writing down the interactions that respect the symmetry up to saying the only thing, this is really saying, the only thing breaking the symmetry in this pion sector is the addition of a mass squared. So if I imagine, if I keep track of how precisely how that mass squared breaks the symmetry, then I can infer its consequences for the pion sector. So we're left with this, and this is a rather surprising result, I think. If you think of the pions in the quark model, I'll just finish off. Pi plus and minus, you would write as usually 1 over root 2, pi 1 minus or plus I pi 2, okay, to get the charge field. We usually think of these in the quark model as being made up, pi plus is built up out of a u d bar. Pi minus, its antiparticle, is built out of du bar. So it's not surprising. I mean, it's not surprising that they'd have the same mass, first of all, because they're antiparticles, and second, because they have the same quark content. Pi naught is equal to uu bar plus dd bar, minus dd bar over root 2. It's a linear combination of these, and it's really not at all, clear a priori. From the quark model, you wouldn't expect these guys to have the same mass. This says they do. Now, let's put some numbers into here. So f pi, you have to measure. So clearly, first of all, clearly, one mass, three numbers. We're not going to get unique values from just the pion mass. F pi, as we'll get to later on, can be measured to be about 92 MeV from other sources, from weak decays of the pion. I'll remind you that weak decays, any kind of gauge interaction, you can think of as coming from the kinetic term. The normalization of that is really fixed by the symmetries and by the normalization of the kinetic term. So once you write down your kinetic term in a canonically normalized way, you know how the thing couples to gauge interactions like the weak interactions. That's why you can fix f pi from that data. Now, delta, you can't fix from any kind of perturbative physics. You can kind of guesstimate that if this is coming from the QCD phase transition, this is coming from QCD dynamics, it should be something near the QCD scale where confinement happens. But you need like a lot of simulation to get a more precise estimate of delta. And the sort of best estimate is that it's around 300 MeV cubed is the strength which quark masses would affect the pion mass. And then when you plug all of that in, and the actual observed m pi, so m pi plus or minus is about 140 MeV, and m pi naught is equal to about 135 MeV. Not quite equal, we'll get to that in a second. You can infer from that that the up and down quark masses are actually very light, that this is around, say, 5 to 6 MeV. So now, you shouldn't stop and say m up plus m down. Let's see whether I'll come back to this difference between the pi naught and pi zero masses in a minute, because I just made a big deal of the fact that they should be equal in this theory, and well, obviously they differ by 5 MeV. So we'll get to that. But first, just a comment about whether this is a good effective theory at all. You first might think, well, the quark masses are 5 MeV, f pi is 100 MeV, 5 is much less than 100, so this is a pretty good theory. But what really matters isn't the. So my concern is to what extent are these pions really behaving like Goldstone bosons? To what extent is this Goldstone description giving me a decent description of their physics? And in particular, if I look at these higher order terms, they're all suppressed. There's higher order terms I can write down, like trace of um squared, right, with higher order in the mass. These are not in an energy expansion. These turn out to be in an m delta over f squared type of expansion, which is really an m pi over f, m pi squared over f squared. Sorry, m delta over f to the fourth expansion, which is really m pi squared over f squared expansion. So this isn't, these terms don't get suppressed by base depending on your energy. They get suppressed by the pion mass over f squared. And m pi over f is actually bigger than one. So, but I'm going to keep using this kind of Lagrangian, not just to describe pions, but to describe kaons, which have masses of 500 MeV. Okay? So you should perhaps be very worried that this thing isn't convergent. Now, yesterday when I was talking about when the strong interactions really become strong, is at alpha of order 4 pi. Okay, here I'm going to argue that the time at which you have sort of democracy among pion processes we'll think of this is clearest and simplest to see in the energy picture, but it's also true of the mass terms, is really at energy or mass of order 4 pi f, maybe 2 pi f. Okay, so when you account for that 4 pi or 2 pi f, you see that there actually is a lot of wiggle room between the 100 MeV and 4 pi times 92 MeV. That's almost a factor of 10. Now, how do we understand that coming about? Well, I'd just like to think about, again, the concern is when are really the E squared, let's think about 2 pi on scattering, right? So what you'd worry about is that your 4 pi on interaction coming from that your 4 pi on interaction coming from, say, an e to the fourth term plus a 6 pi on interaction coming from an e to the sixth term plus an 8 pi on, that if these are all equal at some energy, then at that energy, this whole perturbative expansion doesn't make sense, right? But I'm really talking about cross sections being equal, which means I have to account for the final state phase space. So in this case, I've got an e to the sixth over f to the sixth let's in, so this is in the matrix element. If I look at the matrix element squared, so let me just say in particular, relative to the e to the fourth, I'll normalize to that. Relative to the e to the fourth, this is down by just a power of e to the fourth over f to the fourth. Because this is worse by a factor of e squared in the matrix element, and I'm squaring that. Then when I ask about a cross section, sigma 6 over sigma 4 over sigma 4, that's going to go like e to the fourth over f to the fourth times the phase space for two new particles. And remember, when I add a new particle in the final state, I'm always adding something like this times, and then I end up doing an angular integral times whatever. Okay? So that gives me a 1 over 16 pi cubed times, then my angular integral is going to be some solid angle. So let's say it gives me something of order 2 pi or 4 pi. If it gave me 4 pi, then I'd say that's 1 over 4 pi squared. Really, there's lots of splittings of momentum into different particles here and there. So it's usually more like a 1 over 16 pi squared or bigger that suppresses multi-body phase space for each extra particle. So as I compare this 6 pi on to the 4 pi on rate, I should be also penalizing the 6 pi on cross section by a 1 over 16 pi squared. squared, one for each pion. And you see that the actual ratio then is something like e over 4 pi f to the fourth. Now, so this is where I get my e has to be less than 4 pi f to avoid democracy, to really have a controlled expansion. And when you look at loop calculations, you get the same kind of 16 pi squared factors appearing in the loops, in the loop amplitudes themselves. So, I mean, whether it's 2 pi or 4 pi depends on exactly what estimate you do. For a particular process, you can always do this very concretely and check the quality of your expansion. In sort of broad generality, we're not going to get factors of 2 precisely, because I'm sort of considering just a generic process. But the moral is that roughly for energies above 2 pi f or 4 pi f, you start having problems. For energies below that, everything's completely safe. Now, let's go back to this mass term. We had a mass term for the pi naught and pi plus that we predicted to be the same. They're different by 5 MeV. What's one of the other effects that we talked about yesterday that violates isospin? It was the electromagnetic interactions, right? So in particular, pi plus and minus are charged, pi naught is neutral. There's some electromagnetic self-energy that in the pi plus. It actually is a contribution. So you'd say that m pi plus squared is equal to m pi squared plus some delta, which has dimensions of mass squared, from electromagnetism. Okay, and so you can work out what this delta is. I don't actually remember numerically. I think it's something like 30 MeV quantity squared. When you add it in quadrature, you end up with this splitting. So that m pi plus minus m pi naught is mostly due to electromagnetic effects. In particular, just that, the charge inside of the pion is the net positive charge is interacting with itself. Right, and that has some repulsive contra that's a repulsive force, so it's going to increase the energy that it takes in order to produce that state. It increases it by about that 5 MeV. You can include the interaction in the Lagrangian, but the actual coefficient that goes into this delta is something that you need experiment to get input for. I think you can roughly estimate it just from a sort of E squared over R, right? And R is something of the strong interactions. So you can roughly estimate that the size of the energy correction. But to get it right as an energy squared effect also takes a little bit more. Well, so I think it's just that times the mass. But that's just a very rough estimate. All right, so I promised that we'd first of all, I think the theory of three pions, I mean, it's very nice. We have three pions in nature. We can understand their approximate symmetries, but until you start looking at real scattering processes, you're not getting a lot more out than you put in. So we can look at simple processes. We can look at, say, pi-pi scattering. And if you look at pi-pi scattering, just in the e squared part of the Lagrangian, so you look at the e squared order Lagrangian, with its 1/4 f squared trace del mu u dagger plus delta over 2 times the trace of u dagger u, sorry, of u u m plus complex conjugate. I can calculate to order 1 over f squared, e squared over f squared, I can calculate the scattering amplitude just by expanding that out. Pi a pi b goes to pi c pi d. Has this nice sort of very symmetric structure. I won't work it out on the board, but you can just expand these exponentials and check it yourself. It's 1 over f squared times delta a b delta c d s minus m pi squared, where s is a Mandelstam variable, plus then there's the terms related by crossing, delta a c delta b d t minus m pi squared, plus a delta a d delta b c u minus m pi squared. And this kind of scattering amplitude, so now we can't test it directly because we don't have pion-pion colliders. What we can do is see this is check this formula Weinberg first proposed, check it implicitly indirectly by looking at phase shifts. Right? Scattering amplitudes are always encoded in phase shifts. And so if you look at kaon decays that involve, for example, that involve a pi pi system, by measuring relative phases in that kind of decay, you can extract tests of this amplitude, tests that it's repulsive when it should be, attractive when it should be, and all of its dependence on the total isospin of the pion pairs that are included. And this being an order f squared thing, right, in this Lagrangian, the only parameters are delta times m, and pi squared, which we fixed, and f, which you can fix from the weak decays. So this also predicts the normalization of the cross-section. And this works well. If one starts looking at more complicated processes, higher energies, you need to include the order e squared, order e to the fourth. And many of those parameters have also been measured in multiple ways to check self-consistency. Many of them have been measured to about the 10% level, as sort of the state of the art in the e to the fourth interaction of pions. And Donahue's book has a really nice and very complete summary of what are a lot of the measurements that go into the e to the fourth, how to do renormalization of the pion systems, things that I won't have time to go into, but you can certainly read up on that. So the next topic that, well, I guess I won't go into the next topic at this time. So next time, we will add kaons into the game. So we're going to add a third light quark. And this is just extending the SU2 to SU3. I already wrote down the most general Lagrangian, right? So we'll still be able to ignore C4. But C3 becomes, there's now a third parameter. And but we won't really be worrying about the e to the fourth Lagrangian anyway. Yeah, Tibor? Not really. So this is just a, sorry, what was I saying? So just adding three flavors will mean working with much less familiar generator matrices, because we've all done SU2 math since our first quantum mechanics class, at least. Most of us haven't done tons of SU3 math, but we'll still be able to extract a lot more mass relations and predictions between relating the pion and the kaon sectors. And then after that, we'll talk about the weak interactions of pions. See how far we can get with that. Any questions?